Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Chuck Hammond broadcasting live from the 401k Study Group. Spring is in the air. Today's March 10th. It's 77 degrees in the Mid-Atlantic, and no, this is not your traffic and weather. This is content that moves the needle from the 401k Study Group, but after the 40 inches of snow that we had, which seems like to be 3 weeks ago, it's nice to actually have some spring, some baseball in the air, and with that in mind, we're going to be doing some spring training for your 401k marketing with our marketing friend, Rebecca Ourhan from 401kmarketing.com. Rebecca, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Thanks, Chuck. I appreciate that. I'm doing great. We're here in San Diego, and unlike 77-degree weather out in that Mid-Atlantic, we're about 55, so we've got the opposite going on over here. But you're right, spring is in the air, and baseball is in the air, and everyone has their favorite team. So today's conversation, I was thinking we'd have some fun with baseball and retirement plan marketing.
Well, all right, so we're baseball fans. Let's talk about... Let's dust it off. Let's get it started. The conversation, 401k marketing for the advisor with the baseball twist. Where do we start? What's the first thing we need to do to get our spring marketing ready for prime time?
All right. So I think in today's conversation, we are going to step into the owner's shoes of the major MLB franchises. So as a business owner of your own advisory practice, you own this team. And the first step when you own a team is to figure out who are your home fans. Who are going to be those loyal advocates, and who are the people who are your prospects or your potential fans that you want to draw them into your stadium, your baseball stadium. So I guess when you're thinking about your home fans, think about where your office is located. Go on one of the public 5,500 form databases. Understand the retirement plan marketplace, so what plan assets, number of participants. If you have a specific industry, like doctors, dentists, engineers, blue collar, lots of different things to choose from, and then figure out and outline who are the folks who you are most likely to provide the best value and service to.
I like it. I think that, you know, we've always talked in the industry about developing a niche or finding out where you're good to go and where you're comfortable, the people that you like, the type of industries that you like to work in. And I think, you know, we say that we do that, but a lot of the advisors that I talk to sort of have their home fans there. They know where they're good. They know where they don't like to be. But I think one of the things that which I think is going to move into your next topic, they have a hard time moving up market. And do you think that's because it's a comfort level, or do you think it's because, Rebecca, that maybe they haven't done a good job of outlining their fans, or they see that that high dollar free agent out there that they want to go after? So do you think it's a combination of, you know, knowing your audience and knowing where you're comfortable, or is it a budgetary thing for how do you go out and attract that big ticket player? Or you go up market from maybe, you know, 1 to 3 to, you know, go out and reach for that $8 million plan. What do you think? Is that a budget thing? Is it a demographic thing? Is it a planning thing? What do you think?
So one of the things I've always said in terms of my coaching is look at your 401k business today and look at your lowest plan, the plan that has the least plan assets, and then look at your highest plan, the highest plan assets. Then what you want to do in terms of your cross territory is look in the middle. And that's where you can have your new high watermark as your middle, and then your next one is your highest. So now you take in your prospect territory. Let's say you have between 1 and 10 million, and your average is 5. So now you're working in the $5 million to the $10 million space. And as every year you continue to prospect in that area, you're continuing to move that average up. And the reason why I give that coaching is if you have one $10 million plan and you walk into a $50 million plan. Right now in our industry, it's all about due diligence on behalf of the retirement plan committee. So in that conversation, they're most likely going to ask you, tell me about your other $50 million plan. Tell us about your other clients like us. And if you don't have a client like that, that's okay for right now, but you will get there over time. What you could do, if you're open to this, and if you have a $60 million opportunity, is you partner with another advisor who has that as their core set of business. You're not losing the opportunity. All the while, you're just moving your way up.
I like that. Slow incremental steps, raising your batting average. You know, don't shoot for the moon. It's a lot easier to go from 220 to 280 than it is to go from 200 to 330. So I like that. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the budget. You know, you quote the statistic 1.8 to 2 and a 40% increase. And so budgeting is hard. Budgeting is hard for individuals. Budgeting is hard for corporations. Budgeting is hard for advisors, especially when a lot of folks don't necessarily look at marketing as an investment, but they look at it as an expense. If I'm an advisor, I want to ramp up between now and June for the big end-of-the-year push. Where should the budget be for this? Where should I be setting my sights? Or even better yet, where should I be starting? What should I be spending to get my spring marketing going in the 401k space?
Well, I'd say that the first step is having an honest conversation with yourself about a budget. It's a lot easier to spend corporate dollars when you understand where they're going and they're part of a plan. So if you piecemeal spend $1,000 here, $1,000 here, it's going to feel like, to you as a business owner, big chunks that you're spending on your marketing. However, if you've created a budget and you know that you're going to spend $6,000 on marketing over the course of the year, now as you're partitioning that marketing out, it doesn't feel disjointed. It feels like it's part of an overall strategy. And I'd say if you're going to start marketing today, we are in March, and as you said, Chuck, on the ramp up through the summer season, we can really get out there in terms of having those meetings at the tail end of the summer months. If you haven't done any marketing up until this point, and if you're looking to get the greatest bang for your buck, I'd say you'd probably want to do some type of event, a client appreciation event. Hey, maybe have it at a baseball stadium and invite your retirement plan sponsor clients to bring other business owners. And that's not typical advice that I would give. We are all about, here at 401k Marketing, ongoing, consistent drips. But if you're just trying to hit a grand slam and you have your allocation budget, that's probably where I would direct those resources.
I think that's a good idea. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a big show. There's nothing wrong with doing one event. There's nothing wrong with, you know, setting up something like that, going and doing it, and then make it a constant theme for the remainder of the year. But if we were going to do an ongoing budget, maybe something like that, you know, where would we start it? I mean, is there a right number or a wrong number? What do you think?
So as I've quoted numerous times on the 401k study group, the average advisor spends 1.8% of their gross rev on marketing. So whatever that number is within your practice, take that number and kind of, you know, write it down. And then from there, look at all of the different marketing mediums. And if you want to do an ongoing campaign, which, again, we're a big fan of here, you want to make sure you can slice and dice it appropriately. And that can include social media, blog writing articles, whether that's something that you create or you outsource to create as well, direct mail. We're big fans of that here. webinar presentations. Some people are doing some pretty cool videos right now. And before you, and I kind of talked about this a little bit before, the most important thing is to have a plan, some type of blueprint that you're going to follow. So if it's March today, you know in April you're going to do a direct mailer. You know in May you're going to have your first video posted. In June you're going to host a webinar. So that way there's a process as you go through the season that you're consistently dripping on your prospects. So set a budget and have a plan.
I think that's good. Rebecca, what are the strategies, you know, to get the rest of the team involved? You know, we've got a baseball theme here. You know, a lot of advisors, you know, maybe have smaller staffs. Maybe some of them have larger staffs. You know, what's the best way to engage them or to let them know what you're going to be doing? And or do you even have to?
I think you do. You got to get everyone involved. Whenever you do a marketing campaign, there's a lot of people within your organization that's going to touch those materials, and you're going to want their feedback. So have everyone in, you know, grab coffee and bagels for the team. Talk to them about here's what you're thinking in terms of growing your retirement plan book of business. You have your prospect territory. You have a marketing budget. And now you're trying to come up with a strategy for it. So ask your team maybe some examples of marketing that they've done in the past. By the way, if anyone has questions about this, we can always help you as well. And then in that whiteboarding session, outline who's going to be responsible, what the end goal is, and then how that's going to shake out over time. For example, if you're going to do a webinar, just take this as a hypothetical. You get your team together and you say, all right, guys, we're going to do a webinar. And they say, love it. Sounds fantastic. And you're going to allocate who's going to have different resources. So if you're going to do a webinar, you need emails to go out. So allocate to one of your team members the task of creating email. Then you're going to need someone who's going to actually set up that webinar technology. Allocate that to someone else. You're going to need a PowerPoint presentation. So is that something in-house that you have already? That's something you're going to co-partner with one of the providers or DCIOs so someone can research and find that. And then that person who finds the presentation needs to work with the person who's writing the email. So then that's to coordinate with the person who's setting up the behind-the-scenes technology. So get everyone involved, because if you try and take on the task by yourself, we realize your plates are full. So by spreading that workload amongst your team, it's more likely that you're going to hit the mark when April comes and you're trying to do that grant number.
All right, so let's talk about the equipment. You've got in our pregame notes here, get ready for the game. I see a lot of stale material from advisors. I see stale brochures, stale business cards, stale pitch. What do we need to do to clean that closet out and make sure that it's looking the right way for the upcoming summer season?
Love it. So every year, baseball teams, they get new uniforms, right? New uniforms, new gloves, new bats, new hats. Everything gets refreshed with the new season. Not using last year's stuff. Well, in the retirement plan world, as you said, Chuck, a lot of the content's been recycled for 10-plus years now, maybe even longer. And it's time to kind of dust that off and see what else is out there to professionalize your image. Just as we said in the baseball world, you're going to get all new content at the beginning of the season. In today's day and age, it's so important that your website is on point and it speaks professionalism, that when you hand your brochures to plan sponsors for the first time, it looks sharp and crisp and stands out amongst the competition, that you have consistent marketing content like two-pagers or institutional service calendars, and that your pitch deck, when you're in those finalist meetings, that your $50 million, $10 million, $2 million opportunity, that your pitch deck communicates what your team's going to do, why you care, and ultimately the reason that that plan sponsor should hire you. Marketing content over the last couple of years has really evolved a lot, and if you're using some pieces that, you know, maybe are 5, 10, 15 years old, it might make sense to see what else is out there with fresher infographics and the language of today as well.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Best business card you've ever gotten or seen?
So, best business card was a gentleman at the PANC conference in Orlando a couple years back. It was, how big was that? It was about an 8.5 by 5.5 business card, folded in half. And he said he couldn't fit all of the information that he needed on the card, so on a small card. So he created a big card, and then he had his picture, his info, and on the back it had a whole bunch about who the company was, why, and why they should work with them.
Interesting. The best business card I've ever seen are the people that work for Lego. They're Legos.
Is there a block?
Little Lego figures. I have children. I have boys. We have Legos everywhere in my house, and I think long after we move out or it falls to the ground in a pile of rubble, there will be Lego pieces left in the rubble. People at Lego have their email address and their phone number on a little Lego character, a little Lego figure that doesn't look like them but looks close enough to them. So I've always wanted to give those out as business cards, and I think that would be a great idea. But that's going to lead me into something else that we're talking about. You go to these ball games now, and they got bobblehead giveaway and big foam finger giveaway and hat giveaway. So, two questions. One, what types of things are good to use as promotional items? And then as a follow-up question, should your marketing be different to your existing clients and to your prospects, or should it be the same? So two questions. What should you be doing for promotions? What, you know, you talked value add or client appreciation. So what are the two best ones, and should you be doing the same thing for your existing clients as you are for potential new clients?
So in terms of promotion, there's two schools of thoughts on promotion. There's just straight promotion where you're not giving any value add. And then there's promotion and value add. And I'll give you an example of both. One of our clients recently sponsored a beer cart at a charity golf tournament. They just had their logo on the side of a beer cart. And that was it. That's straight promotion. They're not looking for clients from that. It was in the event that there's a charity, we know people like beer, they're going to go to that, they're going to see their logo. It might pop up in a conversation, but at that event, that was not their goal. Just brand awareness. The other one is promotion and value add. And promotion and value add is a seminar, a webinar, a speaking engagement, hosting a dinner, and then you being able to talk for the first, 3 to 5 minutes about who you are. So there's that promotion and value add. Different ones are going to have different prices. Just keep that in mind. And I think both of them are valuable. If you're new to marketing, you should always do promotion and value add. If you've been marketing for a while where your name is already starting to catch fire, then it's okay to then just do straight promotional.
I like that. I do. I've never sort of put them together as maybe because I'm more of a promotion value add kind of guy, or maybe just a value add type of marketer. I've never really considered the promotional route. I know that it works, and I know that, that's what advertisers do and sponsors do, and they do a commercial or sponsor a golf hole, and it's just never been my thing, but I do see how it works. So when we were doing a little bit of the pre-show for this, we talked about practice, and it's a running joke that the reason why I've done about 130 podcasts is because I have a face for radio. But when my business partner, Chris, and I used to practice our enrollment meetings, we would videotape them. Horrible. And it was painful. And it was miserable. But you have to practice, don't you?
You do. Baseball players don't walk out on the field on opening day and pick up the bat for the first time. They practice a ton in between spring training and that first day. So practice is so awkward. We do the same thing here. We video with smartphones today, Chuck. It's so easy. Just grab your camera, you practice. Your team is in front of you, most of the time laughing at you. And then you can see all of the weird things that you do that's just normal to you. But when you see yourself on camera, oh, gosh, it makes your skin crawl between, like, the hand motions and the shoulder shrugs, even the facial expressions. So practice in front of your team. It's actually more awkward to practice in front of your team than it is to do it live. The last thing you want to do is when you get that dream opportunity, or any opportunity for that matter, as a professional, you should walk into all opportunities prepared. If you get that opportunity and then come off flat, unpolished, unorganized, those are all things that you can work through in advance with your team before the show. I'll actually share just one quick tip. This is something that I do before every conference to get ready. In my office, we probably have, I don't know, call it 10 different chairs for the team, for everyone to sit at. And it'll be late at night, 6:30 or so. I'm still in here. And I will line up those chairs in an auditorium fashion. So there's 15 blank chairs looking at me. But it gives that impression that there's people looking at me. It's terrifying. And then I'll give my entire presentation to the 15 chairs a couple of times over. And by the time it's actually show time, where I'm in a live presentation with an audience of 40 or 60 people, I've already practiced with my chairs that when it's time for the actual show, I'm comfortable. So this is something that I do in terms of practicing, and I think everyone can benefit from practice.
Well, no, and I have to agree. You know, we started doing this, you know, 18 years ago when there were no smartphones. You had the big old camcorder, and then you got to progress to the Super 8 when it was a little bit smaller. But, you know, even when it was just two or three of us in the room, you know, one of us to, you know, sit and watch, and the other one because, you know, you didn't have a remote to press record, or you couldn't do it wirelessly, or you didn't have any of that fancy schmancy technology that we take for granted today. It was difficult and it was hard, but now you can do those sort of things in your sleep. And one of the things that I always get for new guests on the show, or people, you know, most folks who are very self-conscious about exposure, and I think at the core of it, most people are, you know, really not seeking their 5 minutes of fame. The one thing I inform folks about on the show is that, one, you know, we want it to be authentic. You know, if you flub a word or you get tongue-tied or you say, that's okay because we want you to feel normal. But the one thing I can't change is the way you sound, meaning your voice. And you think, in, you know, most people know how self-conscious we as human beings are about our appearance, but our voice is one of those things that makes us probably cringe even more. So I will tell everybody that no matter what you're doing, just being authentic. So, Rebecca, if you don't mind, before I let you go and before I recap, let folks know first of all, where are you going to be presenting? Are you going to be anywhere in the next month or two? Secondly, how can folks reach you? And then I'll recap, and then I'll let you off the hook.
So I'll be at Unified Trust Conference coming up. And that is, I believe, let me grab the date, which I'm very excited about. We're doing a very cool half-day marketing breakout session, and that's going to be May 16th. Unified Trust is a fantastic company, and it's for anyone who's interested. And then I'm also an active member of Women in Pensions, so I've got a couple of speaking engagements coming up in May, June, and July. And those are in, San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Atlanta. So those are coming up as well in the next couple of months. We'll just post those on my website. So if anyone wants to attend, I think that would be a great idea.
Well, I would concur, and I'm also going to see you at FI360, right?
Yes, yes. And actually, for FI360, which is Wednesday, April 6th through the 8th, April the 8th, we here at 401k Marketing are going to be doing a pre-party. So if anyone wants to come to the office, have a couple of cocktails, talk marketing, we welcome it. We're only about 4 short blocks away from the actual conference itself.
Well, I'm taking that as a personalized invitation for me because I will be making the jaunt to the West Coast, something I probably do once every 3 years. So I will be there enjoying the hospitality and engagement and networking with the folks at FI360. Looking forward to the conference, but not so much the travel. But, you know, they're a great group of folks who are doing a lot, not just for advisors, but also for plan sponsors in the industry. So, you know, we kicked off the day by, you know, starting your spring training for your 401k marketing. Rebecca told us to outline your home fans, figure out where you're going. If you're going to move up market, it's easier to raise your batting average 20 points than 80 points. So gradually move up that market. Begin setting a budget. Get your team together. Get them involved because you can't do it all yourself. Get ready for the game, meaning if you're using a business card that's 8 years old, it doesn't cost a lot of money these days to get them revamped, better paper, better card stock. Maybe you upgrade a couple of the images, make it a brighter font, that kind of thing. Do some promotional work, either purely promotional or value-add promotional. And the hardest part about any of this, whether you're speaking or presenting, is you've got to practice what you're going to be doing. So, Rebecca, you know, for lack of a better word, I guess it's time for the advisors to play ball. So thanks for being on the show today. As always, it was fun.
Thank you so much for having me, Chuck. I greatly appreciate it. And as you said, I love it. Everyone go play ball.
All right. Well, thanks, Rebecca. Have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you.